want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore. Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Well, welcome to the Common Sense Show. This is Dave Hodges, your host, along with Katie Whalen, who will be bringing us a very intriguing and interesting health segment in the third hour. She's going to be comparing allopathic care to natural care, and I'm becoming an expert on that due to my own health situation, which, by the way, I'm happy to report on the Ted Brewer Treats Dave Hodges progress report, although he's really not treating me. We're just sharing friendly advice, right, to keep this legal. But I'm doing much better. I've reached two of my three goals already, and one goal is 50%. There, we're going to have Ted on to discuss, you know, exactly everything I went through and what he did. So hopefully people in the listening audience can benefit, and we're in the process of scheduling that. But anyway, welcome. On this very sad and tragic day, my deepest condolences and prayers go out to the victims, their families, and their friends, and really to everyone in America who we all suffer today because of a senseless act of violence. Something that if you go up to the website, thecommonsenseshow.com, after the show, you will see that we have nailed it. This was clearly a conspiracy. Now, a conspiracy means two or more people with a common goal. And you will see with two articles that are there, and read them both in their entirety when this show is over, you will see this is clearly a conspiracy. And from there, we can begin to build our investigation. Although I think I did a fair amount of that in the two articles, and I'm going to come out with something in the morning and do a compilation of what we know to be true at this point, and what we know is this certainly is no random act of violence. Absolutely not. Well, anyway, before we get into the show, let me just remind you that this first hour is brought to you by Renaissance Precious Metals, and that's my friend Steve Quayle, and he can convert your soon-to-be worthless cash that's losing value daily into something that's going to hold its value forever, namely, that's precious metals. And to get a hold of Steve, you can reach him tomorrow at 406-586-4842. That's 406-586-4842. And by the way, we have scheduled Steve for an extended interview on the 26th of June, and we're going to have a lot to talk about by then, I'm sure. This hour is also brought to you by my good friend Bob Griswold at ReadyMadeResources.com. If you want to know anything, and I mean anything, about prepping, you name it, Bob Griswold is an expert in it. He has everything that I can imagine, that I could think of, on his website. The water treatment system he has, the water development system, is fantastic. Night vision goggles. He's got everything that you need. It's a prepper's delight, prepper's dream, reasonably priced, no pressure whatsoever. In fact, they'll consult with you about your needs. If you're beginning into this, they'll tell you, well, here's what you need to do to get started. Call Bob tomorrow, 1-800-627-3809. That's 1-800-627-3809, and his website is readymaderesources.com. And also want to remind you, in terms of storable food, something that I'm very proud to be involved with, and that's Numana Foods. Every type of imaginable scenario is covered in Numana Foods, your grab-and-go bucket, your storage materials, high-quality food, low prices, great service, something that we use. And I would encourage you to visit numana.com/Hodges to see what we have available. If you have any questions, just shoot me off an email, but it's the best deal in town, and you're going to need food and water. And then finally, something that's just kind of a public announcement, a PSA, if you will, from the Common Sense Show. We certainly want you to leave Facebook for your own safety, for your own security, and we would like to see you go over to seen.life. That's S-E-E-N.life. You need nothing else. There's no .com, .net. It's simply seen.life, and there's no censorship. I mean, you can't threaten to kill people. You can't put nudity up there. But, I mean, aside from the things that no one should do, you're not barred from expressing any political opinion. You could make as many posts as you want, unlike Facebook that'll suspend your account for a month. Unlike Facebook, they don't allow Donald Trump assassination pages because that advocates for violence. They allow you to criticize Hillary Clinton, unlike Facebook, that'll ban you for a month. So anyway, scene.life. That gets the preliminaries out of the way. Let me tell you about the show we have tonight. In the second hour, we're going to be joined by Doug Hagman, and we're going to be talking about the tragedy in Orlando and what we have both learned. It'll be interesting to compare notes because I only caught the very tail end of Ted's show where I heard he and Doug discussing this. So it'll be an information-gathering experience for me as well. So Doug will be here in the second hour. Katie will be in the third hour with her health report, as I mentioned. And right now we're joined by Joseph Meyer. And those of you who've been following us for a while recognize Joe as a guy who is a really, really knowledgeable economist, gives great advice. He has great deals for our audience, always brings them to the table. He wants you to be informed because he doesn't want you to get caught short. So without further ado, let's welcome Joseph Meyer from Straight Money Analysis to the Common Sense Show. Hi, Joe.
Good evening, Dave. Thank you and the Common Sense Show for having me. Always a pleasure to visit with you and your listening audience. Thank you, Dave.
Well, it is our distinct pleasure to have you. We're honored that someone of your stature and your reputation would continue to come to visit us to keep us updated. But let me ask you a topical question here, and I know this deviates a little bit from where you were probably going to go.
Okay.
But just a quick answer. When you see a major event like this in Orlando, does it have any effect on things like the stock market, the economy? Is there any kind of ripple effect that we could look for?
Well, I think we're going to look for some selling first thing tomorrow morning. I think the market was ripe to undergo a decline. As you know, I wrote in great depth and detail in the June 2016 issue of the newsletter that I thought it was a time for caution and a time to take money off the table and raise some cash because I felt that this market looked awfully tired and it was setting up for a pretty nasty decline, and I would think tomorrow morning we're going to start that, Dave.
Yeah, I get the feeling, too, because what I'm getting across the country right now is people aren't looking at this as a lone gunman gone crazy on Prozac kind of killer. They're not buying the "we need to seize all the guns." I think people are looking at this across the country with a wary eye, which means they're very suspicious of the system. And correct me if I'm wrong, when people are suspicious of the administration and the system, aren't they extra conservative with their money and their investments?
I couldn't have said it better, and I think that's exactly the mindset of what we're going to see as we move forward. I think people are concerned now on many fronts, the economy certainly being a primary one, but seeing the escalation of this terrorism certainly doesn't bode well for where I think these markets are headed, Dave, quite frankly.
No, there was an episode, and this may be going too far afield, so please forgive me, but I remember on the show 24... there was a season where they started the show out with massive terrorist attacks across America, and it not only had a paralyzing effect on the psychology of the people and afraid to go out to public places and so forth, but it had a paralyzing effect on the economy. If this Orlando tragedy, and by the way, we now have breaking news that an Indiana man was arrested going to go to L.A. to a gay pride movement and do the same thing there. So if we have an escalation of this thing in Orlando and this spreads, what do you think this 24 scenario is somewhat possible, that the stock market will show a rapid decline, people will begin to take greater amounts of money out of the bank for their security reasons? What do you think will happen, Joe?
Well, I think we could, at a minimum, go back and test the 52-week lows, as you know, that we had seen just around this time a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
People lose sight, Dave, that we had the Dow down to 15,370. The S&P traded down to around 1810. And I think we saw the level in the NASDAQ right around 4209. but I felt this market was setting up for a decline. As you know, this has been an unprecedented bull market, I think, from two historic points. Number one, the duration of the bull, which is now over 7 years old, and more importantly, the percentage that this market's gone up over those 7 years. We've literally seen a 300% increase in the Dow and the S&P 500. So this market, I think, for some time has been signaling that it's topping, that it wants to go down, although I did say in the June issue of the newsletter, I thought we could trade above 18,000 one more time, and we've done that. So at this point, I'm looking for lower prices, Dave. The question is just how quickly do we see them?
Wow, that is that's about as ominous of a warning as you can see. What effect do you think that the conventions will have, the Republican conventions, which I think we're going to see a lot of unrest at both conventions? In fact, let me share a story with you, Joe, to kind of tell you where this could be going to get your reaction.
Okay.
I was asked to cover the Republican convention by a private entity, and initially I thought, well, how exciting, and I'll do it, and gee, if it works into my family situation and my work situation, I'll do it.
Okay.
And then as I looked into it, I actually called a hotel, and this lady asked me, the booking agent said, well, are you part of the MoveOn.org group? What? Yeah, MoveOn.org. She goes, they just booked another whole floor of rooms. And that's George Soros, and he's the agitator. And I hung up the phone. I didn't make a reservation. I told my wife I'd rather sit on top of the Twin Towers at 9/11. I'd probably be safer. And I think Bernie Sanders, I mean, his thugs have been out and about beating up Trump supporters, so I don't look for their behavior to change at the Democratic convention. So let me encapsulate this into one question. The conventions. How can we expect the conventions, and we can go either way with this, to impact the economy and people's investment securities?
Well, I think the convention's certainly going to bring light on the problems you and I have talked about in the various shows we've done together. I think when we talk about the problems that we're facing, I think they're critical, and I think they continue to worsen. And quite honestly, as I've said many times, I believe the upside in the equity markets was very limited, and I believe that the downside could be very great. I don't see a reason to stay in these markets as we're getting close to the convention. I think if there's any surprises, it's going to be to the downside, because I think, quite honestly, the upside in this market would be very limited nevertheless.
Yeah.
So I would want to take the risk off the table, and I think being out of the market, you eliminate the risk and eliminate it to the degree that it can certainly harm you. People lose sight of the fact, and it's an important fact that I think has to be said. You can always come back into the market at any time for any reason, but try getting out of the market when everybody's trying to sell at the same time and there isn't anyone to sell to. That's the problem, Dave.
So now is the time if you're going to do it.
Well, now is the time, I think, to certainly pare back, cash in some of your profits, reduce your exposure in the market so you can sleep at night. I think everyone's level of exposure is different.
Right.
But again, I think the surprises that can come in and derail this market, and we certainly had one of them last night, I think could only be the beginning of what could be a follow-through on many more of these.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Another question that's current events related, but I can't help believe it is related, and Trump has talked a lot about these free trade agreements, and for people who say, what's that, Dave, just very quickly, they're basically agreements that allow corporations to dissolve factories within the United States for cheap labor overseas, and then to bring those products back into the United States duty and tax-free, and basically destroy tens of millions of jobs in this country, hurt the economy, while fattening the coffers of the corporations. Now, Trump is talking about instituting a 35% tax. I think he's going to have a hard time getting that through Congress. But
I agree.
Joe, what kind of effect do you think this is having on the market right now, the fact that Trump is now going to be the nominee and he's talking in these terms?
Well, you know, being the nominee and winning the election, as I'm sure you'll agree, are two different things, even
right.
though I think certainly the things that Donald Trump has spoken about, I certainly agree and agree wholeheartedly. I don't think there's a doubt and or any question that the standard of living in America has been going down for quite some time. I wish I could say with honesty and belief that I think we're finally at a bottom, but I don't believe it for a minute. You know, when you look at, since 2009, and I know you know this fact, Dave, 95% of all income gain has gone to the richest 1% of the U.S. population.
Yes.
When you take a look at job creation, as you know, since January of 2016, the economy's added on average about 125,000 jobs a month. In 2015, we were adding approximately 230,000 jobs a month. So clearly we're producing less jobs than we were a year ago. But more importantly, when we look at the key labor participation rate, which you and I have talked about in a previous show, we're currently at a 40-year low, right around 62%. Mm. We've had 460,000 people leave the workforce just in the month of May. So this is a very difficult time. This is an uncertain time, and I think people have to be concerned with the uncertainty as to what can happen next as we move forward. And I think people have discounted an awful lot that I think they should certainly at this time be taking a hard look at what they're doing and, more importantly, why they're doing it.
I feel like you just punched me in the gut. I didn't realize that many people left the workforce. I just wrote out a brief synopsis of the economy today, and I talked about the fact that full-time workers are outnumbered now by non-full-time workers of working age. And
well,
I know that's something that you're aware of.
The number of people who've dropped out of the labor force, we now have about 37.4% of the U.S. population that's dropped out of the labor force. 37.4%. It's at an all-time high.
Yeah, I actually called it a 33% non-participation rate. Let me ask you a hypothetical question.
Sure.
Or, I mean, a theoretical question. We talk about unemployment.
Okay.
And then there's also the concept of labor participation, which is what you're talking about. Which one is more important and why?
Well, I think when we talk about labor participation, we're talking about the people that are currently seeking employment and or actively participating in the labor force. We have 100 million people that are sitting on their butt waiting to find a job. It's unprecedented. I think to go back and look at the levels we had in the Depression of the 1930s, you know, most people don't realize, Dave, we had 30% unemployment in the 1930s, although I think it was a fictitious figure. I think it was certainly much higher than that. But I think when we talk about the true unemployment level we're currently facing here in the U.S., I think it's right around 22, 23%. I really do.
Straight unemployment, not underemployment added in?
That's exactly right.
Okay, as we all collectively take a deep breath, what I've been reading for months, and this goes back into last year, is that the under and unemployment rate together was 23 to 25%. Now you're saying it's 22 to 23%. Well, Obama tells us, and he says that it's only 4.7%. How does he arrive at that figure without?
I think when you take a look at just the number of people you run into in everyday life that have been out of work 3 years or longer, and you take a look at the poor quality of jobs that are being created, and you touched upon a very interesting point in one of your articles where you said you can earn more money being on welfare in a lot of states than you can make working a minimum wage job. What does that say?
Well, in 35 states, it's the best entry-level job there is. So you're right. That's a problem.
A big problem, and I don't see it going away anytime too soon. I really don't.
It's just mind-boggling to me how Obama can get up behind a podium, look the American people in the eye through the camera, and say, your unemployment's 4.7. I know you're right. We used to see the people that would beg for money on the highway exits in inner-city areas. Now we're seeing them in more affluent areas. It's everywhere. And I know that's just an anecdotal presentation of a fact, Joe, but it's everywhere. And I don't know a family that's not somehow touched by this.
Well, you know, when you read that we have over 50 million Americans on food stamps, and people, as we said earlier, earning more in many states by being on welfare rather than seeking meaningful employment, what do those two statements say in itself? I think it tells you volumes what's really going on.
Well, it tells you to stay home and start your own cottage industry, and your cottage industry often is drugs.
You know, I did a little research. Do you know who the largest employer in the United States is, aside of the federal and state government?
Isn't it Walmart?
Yes, it is. Do you know they're the largest employer in 19 states?
It's incredible. And with
the second largest employer after Walmart is the state educational system. Do you know that?
Yes, I did know that.
I want to name quickly for your listening audience, if they're living in these states, and I want them to realize Walmart's the largest employer in their state so they can put things in perspective. Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. Do you know what state employs the most people for Walmart?
I'm not sure.
Yes, you do.
Don't tell me it's Arizona.
Texas, 166,000 employees.
Well, you know, I almost look at Walmart as a government entity because they do so much defense contracting. DHS is all up their rear with all kinds of things, and they're involved deeply with the Chinese military. I mean, they are a government entity. What do we make of this? Is this feudalism forming here with Walmart being in that status?
Well, I think when you look at globalization and you look at the damage that it's done, I think not only to the global economy but to the U.S. economy as well. It's sad when industry continues to seek out the cheapest worldwide labor. And as you and I have said many times, you know, how do you compete against a garment worker in China earning 86 cents per hour or a worker in Cambodia earning just 22 cents per hour? There are no minimum wage laws in these foreign countries. We've now created a working poor with six unemployed Americans for every job opening. So this has been coming for a long, long time, and I wish I could say I see the end of the tunnel, but quite frankly, I don't, Dave.
No, I don't see it either. I wrote an article today, and I want to get your reaction to the practicality. I wrote it idealistically, and I'll fully admit that. And I said, it's time. I went through all the negative economic statistics, some of them we've just mentioned here on the show.
Right.
And I said, it's time. We can't repay the debt. I mean, 1.5 quadrillion derivatives, $21 trillion deficit, over $200 trillion unfunded mandated liabilities, Social Security, Medicaid, so forth. Okay, all that. We can't repay that. There's no way. We only take in, what, about $2 trillion a year? So, regardless, how do we pay this off? Well, we don't. So what I said, it's time for Donald Trump to start talking about debt repudiation. Can you address that?
Well, I think inevitably it's the answer to a problem in which, quite frankly, there is no answer, and you're absolutely right. There isn't any way this debt can be repaid. It has to be written off and forgiven. I mean, I can't say it any straighter than that.
So what would have to happen to make that happen? What kind of obstacles would lie in the way, specifically from your financial experience? Who's going to be able to mount the biggest resistance?
Well, I think the reality is going to set in that the debt is unserviceable, and then more importantly, it's uncollectible. And quite honestly, there isn't any way that it can be repaid. And, you know, we're not going to be the first economy and or the first society to ever go through this, but is going to be, I think, a maze of legal technicalities and problems as we certainly go through the process and the steps that are going to lead us to certainly the default. But again, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when, and I believe wholeheartedly it's inevitable.
Now, this is something akin to what Iceland did. When we did the bailouts, they did the bail-ins, like putting the bankers in jail. That's the kind of bail-in they did. What kind of effect would it have on our economy if President Trump in February of next year said, Goldman Sachs and all you other guys out here, you know that credit swap derivatives debt? It's gone. And you know all these other debts? They're gone. Now, the Iceland economy contracted, correct me if I'm wrong, 4 to 5%. What would happen in the United States?
Well, we would certainly contract far more than Iceland, that's for sure, and certainly it would take longer to work our way through the maze of problems that's going to be coming from certainly moving forward and doing this. But I think at the end of the day, it's going to be positive. I think it's going to allow a lot of people and a lot of entities to start over with a clean slate. And to continue, you know, what has been happening for many, many years just doesn't make any sense, because all we're doing is piling on additional debt that's never going to be repaid anyway.
Well, pardon my bragging on the first end of this two-part question. My son has straight A's in his first year in high school, very well adapted, doing extremely well, and yet I know, and Joe, you probably know, he most likely does not have any kind of future in this existing system. So are you saying that it would be better to have maybe a 10 to 20 or 30% contraction now by repudiation than it would be to continue with the system as is and hope that some people can get through and survive and get decent jobs?
Well, I think when you take a look at the system and you take a look at how much it's deteriorated just over the last 25 or 30 years, and you take a look at the affordability of even being able to own your own home. You know, I've said many times that in a lot of instances, the only home for people that are not fortunate and not able to certainly make large sums of money is going to be when the parents pass away and they leave them a home. That's the only way they're ever going to own their own home, Dave. That's a sad commentary, because owning a home was always the American dream, and we've taken that away now from the average American. It's unfortunate.
Do you see any signs that Congress will one day move on inheritance of homes and attempt? Well, I know in Obamacare they've already put that tax on home sales, or the passing of home from one owner to another. But do you think that Congress will somehow interfere with that inheritance process, because that would really go a long way towards crushing the middle class totally?
Well, I think when you look at the middle class currently, they've been crushed, and crushed certainly to a point I never thought I'd see in my lifetime. You know, the ability to climb up the economic ladder has become more difficult, as I'm sure you'll agree, than any time certainly in our lifetime. You know, what it will take to turn this economy around, you know, as you've said many times, we have the talent, we have the wherewithal, we have the skill, the knowledge, and the ability. But it's going to take sacrifice on all parts of America to certainly do what's necessary. And you question whether or not people want to bite the bullet and do what's necessary to turn us around. I really question that.
I do, too. It might have to be forced on people by circumstances, not by consent.
I think the biggest problem we have, and this is just my opinion, and it's a humble one for whatever it's worth, it's not the problems we're facing, it's the attitude of people in dealing what needs to be done. I think that's the biggest obstacle and problem as we move forward. People's attitude to do what's necessary to deal with the problems and solve them. That's the way I see it, Dave.
Let me ask you a political question, and maybe we can weave this into financial, because
okay.
I see the two being related. Someone asked me the other day, Trump's elected, what's going to happen? And I really hadn't fully laid it out. So I sat down and I etched out my thoughts. And in the first 2 years, he'll do nothing. And the reason he'll do nothing is because the free trade agreement people, the corporations, will fatten the coffers of Congress through legal and other type of what I call legal bribery, campaign donations or whatever, and they're not going to vote along party lines. They're going to vote along their own personal interest lines.
I agree.
And unless there's a cleaning house of Congress 2 years into Trump's term, he has no chance. I think we have to eliminate corporations from donating and getting involved in politics financially. One, is that practical? And two, could it be done?
Well, we hope it can be done, and you're absolutely right. Typically, the first 2 years of any presidential administration, it's very hard to get the people in place and certainly put forward the programs that they'd like to bring, certainly through Congress and the Senate. So he's going to lose 2 years of the first four-year term, and then hopefully in the second 2 years of the first term be able to do a lot of things we're hopeful that he'll be able to accomplish. But I think the bigger question is, you know, would he be able to turn things around to the point where he'd be guaranteed a second term? And I think that's the uncertainty, because I believe, and again, in my humble opinion, he's going to need a second term to really accomplish the things that he's laid out so far that he certainly thinks are important.
You know, you are so right. I wrote about this yesterday, in fact.
Did you?
He can replace all the cabinet heads. He's going to fire every one of them. He can replace people who Obama installed in the military to replace these previous commanders, 300 of them that were fired.
Right.
And he can do all that. But some of these agencies, Joseph, have been in place for so long with the same kind of negative leadership like the CIA and the FBI and so forth, that the problem is all the way down to mid-level management.
True.
And I agree with you. It's going to take more than one term to clean all that out.
Well, I think people, if he were to become elected, are going to want instantaneous results, and I think to some degree they're going to see that. But I think when you speak honestly to the magnitude of the problems we have, how long that we've had them, and certainly how chronic they've become, I don't think we're going to see the positive results that I believe inevitably he'll be able to put in place for quite some time. And I think people are going to be disappointed, honestly, that he didn't turn things around on a dime. And I just don't think that's what's going to happen, Dave. I wish I could see it another way, but I don't.
Well, history's on your side, because when Obama took over and he had all these false promises, the people were really quick to jump on him. I'm talking 3, 6, 9 months into his administration, where he's still wearing off the cobwebs of Bush. And I thought people were unfair in criticizing him, although I didn't support anything he was doing. He was getting the blame for the first year for what Bush did. I could not agree with you, what you're saying more. Joe, let's take a break just for a moment here.
Sure.
And we're talking to Joseph Meyer of Straight Line Money Analysis. And Joe, I want you to tell everyone how they can follow your good work, about your website, and what kind of specials, if any, you're offering.
Okay.
Hello, Joe?
You want me to do it now? I thought you were going to go to break.
No, I want you to do it, yes.
Well,
I'm going straight to the source.
Yeah. This is a quarterly newsletter, and we write about the economy and the stock and bond markets, and we write about gold and silver and the things you should be doing there. We also write quite extensively on crude oil and natural gas, and we also have a pretty lengthy commentary in every issue about Fed monetary policy. And out of respect to the Common Sense Show, and due to my friendship with my good friend Dave Hodges, we're going to allow people to get a one-year subscription at the six-month subscription price, $149.95. They'll save $110 over the one-year subscription price, normally $259.95. And I'm also going to include as a bonus the December 2015, March 2016, and June 2016 issues of the newsletter. And we'll start the subscription from the September 2016 issue of the newsletter, which I'm starting to do the research and write. That's what we can offer your listening audience, Dave, and I'm proud to be able to do it.
Well, we're really appreciative of the fact that you're doing that, and we're going to also make note of that when I write a summary and we post this hour of the show for distribution. That's very generous. But yeah, it is a website that I visit often. I mean, I think there's two standout guys out there right now. I like a lot of things that John Williams does, and I know you differ just a little bit with him, but you agree on a lot of things too. But I also really like your site, and I'm on your site every time I want to write an economic article. I try to make sure I've got the most up-to-date stuff that's out there, and I look at your newsletters that you so graciously send me, and it's just really, really informative stuff. Well, let me ask you a real specific question, because
sure.
I bet where I ask this question about a case I know about, there is going to be a lot of people in the listening audience in the same boat. You've got someone who retired.
Okay.
And the 401k was part of their retirement, and they can't cash it out until they're 59 and a half, in which point they'll pay tax on it.
Okay.
Now, they're locked in the market. They don't have a choice. That's their only retirement. They could take it out and take a 50% penalty, which would be devastating, and they can ride it out. If they have to ride it out, what kinds of investments, because they do have leeway in terms of where they put their money, So what would you recommend to them when they're trapped in this 401k bubble to their 59 and a half? Where should they be putting their money right now to limit their exposure?
Well, I think everyone, honestly, their situation is different, but I think you certainly want to get away from the risk and the exposure of the equity markets.
Okay.
I think the next move, certainly of any consequence, is down and not up. And I think the key is preservation of your capital and safety, and you want to move out of certainly risky assets. You know, having said that, I would want to look at the precious metal sector. I would want to raise some cash and stay in the money markets and try to reduce any additional exposure you may have in the bond market as well. This is not a time to try to create wealth. This is a time, Dave, honestly, to try to preserve wealth.
Correct. Yeah, I run an ad for Renaissance Precious Metals with my good friend Steve Quayle, and I talk about take your declining cash and put it into something that's going to hold its value. At least what we do here is we do go a lot of, and I'm speaking about the Hodges family, we do a lot of precious metals investment. But we keep enough on hand that we can live our lives, and we have cash reserves, so if we have an emergency.
Very important.
Yeah, and by the way, I read this statistic when I was doing research for my article this morning, that 62% of all Americans could not absorb a $400 emergency expense.
I think when you look at this economic cycle, I think it's been unprecedented, and I think you take a look at the devastation it's caused all across America. I'm not surprised to see that statistic. I'm really not.
Yeah, well,
this has been a devastating economy over the last several years, Dave. No question, it's taken a toll on working class America. And I wish I could say it's done doing its damage, but it's like a truck running down a highway. It's still running over people.
And, you know, it's interesting to hear someone in your position say this, because your life would be infinitely easier if the economy was sailing along and doing just fine, wouldn't it?
Well, I don't have a vested interest in telling you anything other than the truth. You get the newsletter,
yeah,
you know the topics I write about, you know my writing style. You know the research and the information we share with subscribers in every issue of the newsletter. Quite honestly, I've never seen another newsletter comparable to the one I write. I'm not saying that because I write it, but I'm saying it because I looked at many different newsletters throughout my almost 50-year career on Wall Street, and I never seen another one comparable. We write about what you need to know, why you need to know it, and lastly and more importantly, what you can and should be doing about it. And as you know, I'm always willing to take the time to spend a minute or two and answer a question of a subscriber if they call.
I don't know, honestly,
of another newsletter writer in the country that'll take the time to speak to a subscriber and answer a question, but we've always done that. And I think it's an added service that brings to the table, again, the true value of what we're doing in the newsletter. I think, honestly, it's a very special publication.
I view you as completely objective, or I wouldn't have you on the show. Let me qualify my question a little more definitively. Good news travels better than bad news, is what I'm saying.
Yes,
and when
it
we
does.
Have to give people, and I'm speaking from my perspective too, Joe, not just yours, when I have to deliver bad news after bad news after bad news, it's pretty easy to get labeled, you know, as a doomsayer or whatever people want to call you. And so I'm saying, for me, my life would be, I'd like to come on here and talk about how to achieve goals and what holds marriages together, and, you know, talk a little bit about some of my academic training and how it applies to people's lives and what they can learn from it. But instead, you know, if I'm going to deal with people's needs, I'm relegated to talk about the negative, and that's kind of where you're at right now, isn't it?
Well, I think we've got to talk about what's happening, what it truly means, and lastly and more importantly, what we can and should be doing about it.
I don't make
things happen. I just write about them, and I tell you what I believe they mean. You know, I was bullish on the equity markets. In fact, I did a show with George Noory September 7th, 2015. And George thought the market would go straight down, and I disagreed with him, and I said we'd get one more rally, and I thought we would get back to 18,000, and we have. And here we are now several months later, and I know people that were very bearish at the time I was bullish in a show I did with Coast to Coast are now the complete opposite of that, and I have now taken a complete turn from bullishness to bearishness. And quite honestly, I think it's time to get out of the market, take some money off the table, and raise some cash. So we're on both sides of the market. It's just a questioning of what side we're on, given the circumstances of what's happening and what I think is certainly changing in the markets that we have to be aware of. And I remain very positive on energy. I like both crude oil and natural gas. I remain very positive on both gold and silver. But I think the stock and bond markets are long overdue for a meaningful decline and or correction, Dave. That's the way I see it.
I'm taking notes, in case you're wondering.
I want to do quickly, and I know we always run out of time when I visit with you and your listening audience. I'd like to give some parameters that people can use as a guide as to support and resistant levels in the various markets, so they can pretty much watch the numbers as this market does what you and I have just discussed that we think it will. Okay?
Okay.
In the Dow, we got support 17,500 and then 17,250, and honestly, I think we're going to see those two levels very, very quickly. We also have resistance in the Dow, first at 17,750, which is approximately where we are now, and then 18,000. In the S&P 500, I've got support 2050, 2025, 2000, then 1950. I've got resistance in the S&P 2075, which is approximately where we are now, and then 2100. And in the NASDAQ composite, the support levels 4700, 4600, 4400. And I've got resistant levels in the NASDAQ 4800, then 4900. These are levels people can watch now as what's going to unfold in these markets, I think, is going to be very dramatic, Dave.
When the walls come crashing down, that's the song that's playing in my head right now, what you were just saying. But I like what you do, Joe, in terms of it might be negative, but I know you're providing hope. You're telling people, hey, you may not be able to stop the impact, you'll feel the impact, but you can lessen the impact. And that's kind of what we're getting here, and I see that very clearly.
Well, you know, a lot of times you talk to people and you ask them if they have a plan, and they tell you to do. They do. But they're unable to tell you what the plan is, Dave. They think in their mind they're prepared and they're ready, but they're really not, because they don't have a plan. They want to believe somehow all they have to do is sit back and the plan will take care of itself. And as you and I know, that's not going to happen.
If things really went south, let me tell you what I'm most concerned about. Of everything you've said tonight, the 37% non-participation rate in the economy in terms of employment, gainful employment that's full-time. As the old saying goes, an idle mind is the devil's workshop. So you have over a third of the country sitting around, and they're not vested in the system. They're not vested in the welfare of the country, the welfare of the economy. But when things go south and food is hard to obtain, water is hard to obtain, this is the stuff that revolutions are made of. It kind of reminds me, they could become an army like Spartacus's slave-risen army, and they could basically create such havoc in this country would never be the same. Can you address that?
Well, I think there's no question there's change underway, and we're never going back to certainly where we were before. You know, having said that, do I know exactly where we're headed moving forward? Well, you know, the way events are unfolding and unfolding, as I'm sure you'll agree, very quickly, it's somewhat difficult to really get a handle on how much worse things can really get before they get better.
Yeah.
But I think we've got a movement, we've got a mindset, we don't want any more of what we've had. I don't think at this point we've really decided on, you know, who is best to do what needs to be done that we want to see certainly accomplished, but there's no going back. I think we'd like to go back and do it over again. Certainly guys our age, I know if we could do it again, we would do it differently, but, you know, that's certainly an impossibility. The challenges as we move forward are going to be ahead of us, and as I've said many times, people fight change. You don't fight change, Dave, you go with it. I think the key moving forward, and people have asked me, what's going to be the greatest currency as we move forward? Is it going to be gold? Is it going to be silver? Is it going to be diamonds? You know, is it going to be real estate? You know, what's the greatest currency moving forward? And you know what I think the answer to that is?
What's that?
our individual talent. I think our knowledge, our wisdom, our expertise, that's going to be the currency of true value as we move forward. It's going to be individual, it's going to be very personal, and it's going to be very valuable. And I think people are overlooking that as to its importance. I really do.
Well, we still are the entrepreneurial and inventor capital of the world.
Yes,
we
are.
There's no question about that. It's not even close.
No, it's not.
And I do agree with you. There's the hope right there. The threat of resilience to what's going on lies in our talent. But the problem is our talent has been stripped from us. I mean, let me just give you one small example.
Sure.
Rather than people being empowered as small business to grow and to hire and empower their employees to be all they can be, Obamacare is holding their employees to 29 hours a week. That's stripping at the fabric of the workforce.
That is why we're going to see change. I believe it's going to be very dramatic, and it's probably going to be very accelerated when we get on the pathway to what needs to be done. We're coming to the point where I believe the average American, quite honestly, can't go any further down this road. I think he's at the end of the road. I think he wants to make a U-turn. He wants to drive back up this road. He's sorry he went down it in the first place. He needs direction, he needs information, and he needs facts in which to make good decisions with the time he has left in which to make them. That's what we do in the newsletter. We give you the facts, we tell you what they mean, we tell you how to use them, and we tell you why we think they're important. That's why I write the newsletter, Dave.
Yeah, that's... And I can't encourage people enough to get it. And once again, before
it's going to be the best money they ever spent, because they're going to learn more from somebody who has lived the times he writes about in the newsletter. Most people write about these markets from a historical standpoint, something they read in a textbook. I write about these markets having lived the times. Got in the market in 1966, as you know, became a Wall Street professional in 1972.
Right.
We've been in these markets 50 years. There's not many guys who can go back and tell you what the markets were like 50 years ago, but I can because I was there. I can tell you the similarities. I can tell you the differences. I can tell you what worked and what didn't and why. And I can tell you what I've learned in my 50 years of being in these markets as to what you need to know as we move forward and how you can take advantage of opportunities that I think most people don't see and or realize. That's why you need the newsletter.
What do we do with the crowd who believes what they see on mainstream media news?
Well,
that tells
some people
you everything
only want to believe
okay.
What makes them feel good. I don't write about things that make you feel good. I write about things that can make you money.
I know, but there's a whole body of people sitting out there that need what you're putting out. And they're listening to the wrong source. And this is why the Common Sense Show exists, right? And this is the sole reason right here is because we're presenting a side of reality that is real that you're not going to get if you just watch your satellite TV. And to me, that's what's really disturbing. Joe,
well,
if you
I've
were...
said many times, I can give you the information, I can tell you what it means, I can tell you how to use it, but I can't read the letter for you. You know, I write a 28 to 32 page newsletter. You've seen numerous issues of the newsletter. You know exactly the content that we put into every issue of the letter. But you have to be willing to read. You have to be willing to get educated. The information is there. You know, what you do with it after I put it in your hands is up to you. You know, my job is to put it in your hands and put it in your hands in a timely fashion, and that we do, and that's what we hopefully can continue to do. But
Dad
people
told me one time.
wanna somehow cling to what doesn't make any sense and what hasn't made any sense in the belief at some point that it will make sense. And you and I know it's never going to make sense, but you can't convince people of that.
Because they all live in Kansas. the biggest question I want to ask, and I want to ask it now because we're going to run out of time if I don't. If you were being sworn in, you go back to the Oval Office and you go to work, what would be the first three things you would do if you were the president?
Well, I think the first thing we've got to do is put people back to work. We've got to create some decent paying jobs. There isn't any way we can live with this chronic unemployment. There isn't any way we can live with this chronic poverty that now become part of America. I think we got to rebuild our military. We got to make it very strong. I think we've got to certainly take the lead once again throughout the world, and I know we have the ability and the talented people that will allow us to do that. We've got to fix Social Security, and we've got to fix Medicare. There isn't any way, if we don't fix these two plans, that they can continue to operate, Dave. Those are the three things I would do.
Yeah, and you've hit a big segments of our economy, there's no question.
Absolutely.
Debt repudiation, I think, is a matter of timing. And if you were to give advice to the next president, and debt repudiation was definitely his or her agenda, when would you advise them to bring it out? At the beginning, the middle, or the end of their first term?
That's a tough question. I think, you know, inevitably you'd like to bring it out as soon and as quickly as possible. But, you know, timing is everything, and maybe the timing of bringing it out early in an administration wouldn't be a good idea. I'd have to think about that one, Dave.
Yeah, I've been posing that, too, because whoever the candidate is that wins, if that's their agenda, boy, if they did it too early, I agree, they could really alienate people and never get them back. And
you know,
I'm talking about political allies.
If you want to help people, you tell them the truth. If you want to help yourself, you tell them what they want to hear.
That's true. That's very true. What effect do you think, well, once we get out and we know that it's Hillary versus Trump, and unless there's an unforeseen circumstance, September to November.
Okay.
What would you see happening economically during that time?
Well, hopefully things will start to improve on the anticipation that, you know, we're going to get someone who's going to certainly deal with the problems and deal with them very effectively. Again, is there a guarantee? No. No one knows, and you touched upon it earlier, what's going to happen at these conventions. I wish I could say that I know, but I don't. You know, will Trump be the nominee? I think he should be, and hopefully he will be, but is there a guarantee? I don't know. You know, will Clinton be the nominee? Again, you know, could Sanders wrestle the nominee away from her, nomination away from her? I think there's a possibility of that. So, again, when we're looking at the uncertainty that I think is ahead of us over the next couple of months, and again, we get back to the equity market, what's the absolute certain thing you can do? Well, you can take the uncertainty out of the risk of the market by taking your money out of the market. That's why I don't think this is a time to put new money to work in the equity market and or sit and be 100% fully invested. I just can't justify the level of risk that I think people would be taking by doing that, Dave. It's one man's opinion, but again, this is the way I see it.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And you take someone like George Soros, and he's voting with his feet. I mean, he got out of the market, and he's buying gold, you know, as fast as he can acquire it. So when in Rome, do as the Romans do, as I like to say. And I think that that's really clear. And he represents the message in some ways that you're presenting tonight, that you don't want to be in these risky investments, and you want to have cash on hand, and you need to be in precious metals to some degree.
Well,
Joe, before we run out of time,
the problems, and I think they're numerous that we're facing. There's a lot of problems that we can't certainly deal with and or do anything about. But I think when we talk about our personal finances, we're still in control. There are things we can do. It comes down to whether or not we believe that we certainly should be doing them. But if the upside is limited, and again, I think it is in these markets, and the downside is great, you know, what's the incentive to take the risk and be in these markets? I don't see it.
Yeah. Common sense. Common sense says you're not in these markets, and I couldn't agree with you more. Well, Joe, before we run out of time, I want to review one more time how people
sure.
can follow your really, really special work at Straight Line Money Analysis, and how they can get a copy of your newsletter.
StraightMoneyAnalysis.com. We got a full sample issue of the newsletter on the website so people can see exactly before they become a subscriber what they're going to receive. And when they sign up for the newsletter, hit the six-month button, put under merchant comments, Common Sense Show, and we'll credit the six-month subscription for a full one-year subscription, and we'll get them out, the back issues of the newsletter, and if anybody has a comment or a question, just pick up the phone and call. We're here to certainly answer any questions you may have.
That's about as generous an offer as we've had on here, and I'll tell you, take advantage of it, folks, because I read Mr. Meyer's stuff all the time, and it's among the best out there, and I know I'm better educated because of it. Well, Joseph, you've been a very special guest on this show, and we appreciate your continued participation, and we look forward to having you back the next time.
Well, Dave, you've been a very special friend to me, and I want you to know I'm always here for your listening audience in any way that I can be of assistance, and we certainly look forward to visiting with you and your listening audience once again.
Okay, very good. Joseph Meyer, ladies and gentlemen, thanks a lot, Joe.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's a pleasure.
Katie, I wanted to bring you in just for a second. Here, we got about a minute before we go to break.
Sure, what's up, Dave?
I just, first of all, that was about the fastest hour we've done for a while.
I know.
And you know, the old saying comes to mind here, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. I mean, this is just what we heard from Joseph Meyer. He's telling you what's happening. And what's interesting is he sounded like he wrote my last two articles. And not just my two articles. If you go over to the Daily Beast, the Daily Caller, if you go to InfoWars, the many articles that Steve is putting on his site at stevequayle.com, if you look, we're all saying the same thing. If you haven't made a move with your money and your investments, you need to do it now. Katie, I know you've done that.
I have. I have made some, I've tried to make some good decisions, but I think where you're getting at and what I think I'm hearing is, what is it going to take for people to step outside of their comfort zone, what's familiar, what feels good, and snap out of it and start making some moves?
Exactly.
Is that...
You're exactly right.
Whether it's financial, whether it's political, wake up, who's running the show, whether it's your health, whatever it is, there seems to be a paralysis. And we've talked about on the show many times why we think that is, but we've got to push beyond the paralysis and start cutting these things off at the pass. Is that where you were going?
That's exactly where I was going. And it just... Because I would venture to say that we probably get 10 to 20% of the people who come here on every broadcast, or they'll hear this in the archive, or it's redistributed over and over, and a week later they'll hear this. And they're thinking, man, these guys are nuts. Everything's fine. Obama said unemployment is at the lowest rate since the Depression. It's great out here. And then we turn around and we look at what's really happening in our communities. And there is no way that everything is okay. There is no way that things are fine.
You know, I'm not a real big vaccine person, but if someone could create a vaccine for people to wake up and to do away with, just get rid of this cognitive dissonance.
I hear you, Katie. And you know what else I hear?
The music.
The top of the hour break coming. We got to scoot.
Okay.
So we come back, we'll be joined by my good friend Doug Hagman, and we're going to unfold what's going on in Orlando as well as other things. Stay tuned. We will see you in hour number two. That's if my keyboard cooperates.